Welcome to another 10K Saturday. This week, Lulu talks with singer, songwriter, and actress Deanna Gowland, whose new release, Make a Sound, just hit iTunes, Spotify, and all the other streaming platforms. You're definitely going to want to add her music to all your playlists, especially that Figure Out What's for Dinner list. And actually, we can help with that too. This week, we're talking about Blue Apron, the OG of meal home delivery services. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. And you can select between 2, 3, or 4 meals a week. Just check them out at $10kdollarday.com/blueapron to check off your dinner plans and get ready to meet Deanna Gowland. Make sure you stick around until the end because we've got her new single queued up just for you. Enjoy.
And now, it's 10K Saturday with Allison and Lulu.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another 10K Saturday. You just heard that awesome introduction by Allison, but now you get to hear mine. If you are here, then you are here for an interview. We've got a great one with Deanna Gowland coming right up for you. But you might also have seen those other episodes in your feed. That's because you're here at $10K Dollar Day, the comedy podcast about imaginary luxury travel. And since 2018, we have been bringing you our signature luxury imaginary travel days. I got a little mixed up with all those adjectives, but you know what we mean. Every episode, we spend a fake $10,000 somewhere in the world in 24 hours. It is all fake, but it is all creative. Man, we wish we had 10K, but we just don't. We also tell you where you can give it away because we always find a nice charity. We also have a whole other podcast. It's called The Daily Happy. That is a 10-minute podcast. Just says hi or how you doing. We're all making it through together, that kind of thing. Some people use it to wake up. Some people use it to wind down. We always use it to say hi. But you are here for the 10K Saturday, and we have Deanna Gowland. Hey, Dee.
Hello.
Listen to that voice. Even talking, she sounds great, right? Oh, even just talking. This is what it's going to be, Dee, this for 30 minutes, just me loving on you. So
I'm ready for it. Thank you.
Well, I want to tell everyone why they hear such a smile in my voice and how excited I am about, I don't know, Dee, like in general, because I think that you are incredible. But we actually met, and I normally shy away now from origin stories of how I know our guests, but I think that what we were doing when we met is so different from what you're doing now that I want to bring it up. Yeah. So when we met, you were playing The Ghost of Christmas Past in A Christmas Carol in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
That's right.
You were a beautiful Christmas past, by the way. Just gorgeous.
You.
Yes, always made me laugh. And we had a really intense couple months because it was over the holidays. That always makes things intense because you end up spending Thanksgiving together and Christmas Eve together. And we cooked a lot together. And we ended up carpooling a whole lot.
All the time.
To work together. So I always respect someone that will go with me to Taco Bell at any point, Dee. We've built a lot of our friendship upon
on
that.
Those mini quesadillas. Those things were the bomb, which they don't have anymore.
You can still order them, Dee.
They won't let me. Not out here. They won't let me in order LA? Them anymore. Yeah, in LA, they don't let you order them.
See, this is the problem. This is small town America. We were in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where they would let you order off the menu at Taco Bell. And then you got your big britches. You moved to LA. And now you just got to take it the way it comes because they judge you in LA if you're at Taco Bell.
I'm missing out now. So
you are. Let's talk about the fact that you live in LA. Because this chick who was on this musical theater trajectory of life is now living in LA and like is a pop star, and I can't get over it. So talk to me about 2020 and this move that you made.
2020 was crazy for everybody, obviously. I graduated from college in 2019, and pretty consistently from mid 2019 onto March of 2020, I was working like in regional theaters across the country. I was doing shows and everything. And then COVID hit and I moved back home with my parents for a few months. And it was crazy and we didn't really know what was going on. And it was really nice to just kind of be home with family for a little bit. But then I was sitting there one day just thinking to myself, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I don't know when theater is going to come back, if it's going to be a thing or not. right before COVID had happened in March, my sister and I did backup vocals for a friend of mine on an album that he was working on. We had never done anything like that before. And we thought it was the coolest thing ever. Like being in a recording studio, we were like, oh my God, I want to do this all the time. And so COVID happened and I was sitting there saying, okay, well, let me turn to music because even though, you know, it might not be happening in the theater, I can still create it here at the house. And I started writing my own music. And that same friend that I had done the backup vocals for, I started sharing music with him. And he was like, dude, you got to record this. You should do something with this. And that same friend is kind of the one that convinced me to move to LA at the same time. Through this like crazy turn of events, he offered me a job. And like a month later, I was moving to California. So wow. Yeah, that was like all just kind of out of nowhere. I didn't know what was happening, only that like I could only bring what I could fit in my tiny little car and I was moving to California. So wow. Yeah.
So you're making music, you're in a different place, you're with different people. The music you're making now, is it what you would have made 2 years ago?
Absolutely not. Yeah, it's 2 years ago. I'm not even sure. It probably would have been me with a guitar and nothing else. And it would have been very singer-songwriter-esque, which is totally nothing wrong with. But when we went out to record in the studio with my friend, who at the time was in Oklahoma City, he moved to LA in the middle of quarantine as well. So we did this recording in Oklahoma City. And when I saw like what you can do in a studio, you don't have to have a 7-piece band in order to sound like it on a recording, that just like opened my eyes. And I know for a fact that I don't think I would have been confident enough to say, I'm going to venture into now learning jazz theory. And I'm going to start learning about actual sound engineering and all of this crazy stuff to be able to put out what I'm putting out now.
Oh my gosh. That's so exciting and cool. I remember when we were doing Christmas Carol, you brought in a recording or a demo of you and your sister doing a cover of a song. And I can't remember what the cover was, but it did have that kind of singer-songwriter quality to it. It was very beautiful harmonies, simply sung, simple arrangement, but very pretty. And lots of modulations, but just like a simpler sound. Mm-hmm. So when I heard what you're doing now with all this funk situation and like horns, it was crazy. So let's back up. You and your sister, you even said that you were doing backup vocals with her. Have you been singing with your family since you were little?
Yes. Yeah. I was cast in my first musical, all thanks to my parents, when I was 4. I did The Music Man. That just kind of like opened the doors to my love of music and theater and everything that realm. And we would do, when I was a kid, every musical that we did as a family. And it was,
that's so cute.
I'm not even joking. It was awesome. I think there was maybe one show, and it was my first professional show ever when I was 9. That I did by myself. And the only reason that I did it was because it was professional. And my parents were like, this would be a great opportunity for your good to look on your resume and everything like that. But everything else that we did growing up was community theater as a family. And we would get in the car and all go to rehearsal together. Now I get to make my own family, you know, when I get into a new show, and it just like always makes my heart feel so warm. but yeah, no, I've been singing with my family for as long as I can remember. My grandparents were directors. My aunts and uncles and all my brothers and sisters did it and everything. And then Tori, my closest sibling, we had our little band, and we got to sing together all the time, which was really fun.
Yeah. And so now you've kind of found this new sound that you're playing with. And I know that we've talked a little bit about this new music you're putting out. You are writing it all yourself, but you have some collaborators helping you create this new sound. So what is that like working with them? What's the process like bringing that new sound together?
Yeah, it's, I have to say I'm a lot more comfortable with it now. When I first started, because I didn't start writing my own music until quarantine. Like quarantine hit. And that was my first experience with writing original music.
Because you were doing like covers mostly before that, or you were just laying into other people's projects?
Yeah. I mean, from up until last year, everything that I was doing was musical theater and my cover band. And that literally was the only thing that I had any experience with. When I first started having to collaborate with other people, I was terrified because I was like, I don't feel worthy. I was like, I don't know enough about anything going on in this room to like feel like I'm really contributing anything. And as I've gone more and more into the studio, I'm finding out that, you know, nobody's better or worse than anybody. It's, you know, everybody just brings something different and the new perspectives make it even better. Not to be all cheesy and everything, but
that makes sense. And, absolutely.
Yeah. So the whole collaboration experience is, I mean, to be honest, most of it ends up being me and who is now my boyfriend, but at the time he was the studio engineer that we were working with. We met doing the backup vocals for my friend, and we started dating in January. So it's fairly fresh and everything, but that is a really, really cool thing to get to do with somebody. And he is like a freaking genius. I mean, plays every instrument under the sun, knows a ton about music theory, knows a ton about music production and everything like that. So I have learned so much in that realm. There were times where I was like, oh, I would love to have horns here, but I think it's too much. You know, I don't know. And he'd be like, oh no, here, do this. And then, you know, we'd have the horn player play something and he would mix it in and it would sound phenomenal. And that is something that like I still have yet to wrap my head around is being able to make sure that all of the parts are meshing well together, because I'm definitely a vocalist first. That's that's what I love to do. I'm the singer, and then everything else kind of I can write it, but it's just such a crazy like new mindset that I have to get into. So
yeah. Well, I mean, I hardly ever do anything on my own. I am a collaborator first, always. Kind of for that idea. It's almost like I know my idea will be better if someone else looks at it. Mm-hmm. But that's just me. I think there are other artists who really thrive on making sure every single part of it is their vision. You know, that's what they want to do. And meanwhile, I'm like, I think this is as far as I can go.
Yeah.
I need someone else to make it shiny, you know, or the other way around. Like I can make your stuff shiny.
Yeah. Yeah. I am exactly the same way, because I write out all of my demos and everything before I bring them into the studio to actually record. And when I get there, I'm like, man, what else is he going to add to this? There's no way. Like I've thought of everything, I feel like. And then we get in there and the song sounds totally different by the time we're done. And I'm like, whoa, this is so much better than I could have even imagined. And like, that's just the beauty of collaborating.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
When you're writing, I'm sure you get asked this a lot as a songwriter, because it's the oldest interview question in the world. But what does come first? What comes first?
That is a really good question. And I feel like the age old answer from the singer songwriter is that it always changes.
Yep, sure.
Yeah, I have a tendency to start writing bass lines first, which is really interesting to me because I don't play the bass. That's like what I'm in the process of learning how to play. But if I can find, I love funk now, as I'm sure you have heard from my songs. But if I can find a funky bass line, I can build on that and everything usually like ends up blossoming. But sometimes I'll just have a lyric in my head and then I'll write an entire song around like one lyric that I want to put in a song. But it's never consistent really.
Are you a fast writer or a marinator?
Oh, again, it kind of depends. Like Make a Sound, that was like my most recent release. I wrote that in like 2 days and it just kind of all came out and I was like, woo, amazing. This is done. Mm-hmm. But then for other things, like I have another song out called Monotony, and that song took me, I wasn't actively working on it for this long, but I probably about 4 months for me to finish that song.
Yeah.
So it just kind of depends, I guess, on where I am at that point.
I've realized that as a creative person, I have open tabs in my head a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like those 4 month songs that you're talking about. I have a lot of long term projects that just kind of stay open to see if something inspirational happens during the day.
Yep.
So I find myself staring off into space sometimes, and people are like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, that guy is walking weird, and it made me think of a song. And then I was wondering, if that was a movie, would the song go with it? But then if it did, would it need to be shot on a long lens because it doesn't really have the intimacy? Like, my mind is crazy. Meanwhile, I'm just staring off into space.
And like, yeah, you have a whole like novel being written and nobody knows it.
I don't think people understand that when one of my favorite things to do ever is just to have music on my ears and live my life, because it turns every moment into a crane shot from a movie montage.
Yeah.
Like every moment you can look out and just go, I'm watching a soundtracked movie montage right now.
That's the best. I love to sit in the passenger side of a car with like the music blasting and just like, I'm in a movie now.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Thank you. Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I like to do. You have not yet brought up your child TV career, and I don't know why we haven't.
Have we talked about that before?
Oh, you and I have talked about this. I think you might have been drunk, but we've talked about it.
Amazing.
And now I'm bringing it up because if you were once like jealous of those kids who got to be on a TV show, especially ones who got to cook, then you might have been jealous of Dee. Tell us about your childhood, Dee.
So I was on a children's cooking show in Chicago when I was, I think, 13. I was in middle school, and it was called the Junior Cuisine Cooking Show. And boy, did we cook. It was... that is what we did. It was local to like the Chicago PBS network, I believe. But that was like my big break. I mean, they were shopping that show to Nickelodeon. They were shopping it like to Disney Channel, just everywhere. I for a while was like, am I going to be a huge, like,
well,
child
I mean,
star?
Were you living that, like, I go to school, I have a thing, then I get picked up, then I go to the studio. Were you like in that life?
No. So the way that it worked is because it was all children. So obviously, you know, you have to like child labor laws are a thing. Hey, you're going to have to give me 1 second. There's a spider on my wall.
Oh my gosh. Go get that, please. Oh, she's left.
Okay.
Did you hear that, everyone? She like, spider. She got it.
That was the biggest spider I have ever seen in my life. Okay.
Yeah, but you just, there was like no hesitation with you. It was like step, 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 boom, step, 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 done.
Yeah, that's not usually how I am, but I saw him last week and he disappeared. And so I was like, this is my one chance. I gotta get him. But yeah, so back to being a child actor. So the way that it worked, because the show was shot in Chicago and I was still living in DC at the time. So we literally drove like 16 hours to Chicago for the original audition. And they found out that I was from DC and they loved it. They were like, we didn't think anybody was going to travel that far for this. And I ended up getting cast on the show. And so what would happen was over the summers, I would fly out to Chicago with my dad and I would stay with my uncle who just happened to live out there. And we would, for like 2 or 3 months, film a season of the show. And then I would fly back to DC for the school year.
And did your friends in DC understand that you were a celebrity in Chicago?
I think kind of. I definitely was not a celebrity by like any means, but they knew like what I was doing and they were like, Deanna's going to be on TV. This is so cool. And it was also a really big deal when I dyed my hair red for the first time because I did that for the show. So I left.
You mean you did it for the show? Because you were 13. Were they like, we need a redhead?
Kind of, yeah. So so what happened was there were 5 kids on the main cast. And the first season I was a field correspondent, so that didn't matter. I did like my little segments about like, today I'm here at this pizza place interviewing the owner. And then
this, second, you understand, that's like literally my dream job from $10K dollar day. You lived it when you were 13.
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad that now you can like just live vicariously through my childhood.
That's, I am.
But yeah, so second season, I got moved up to the main cast and 3 out of the 5 kids were blonde, including me. And I was the oldest. They were like, you all look related. It's kind of weird. We don't love it. So Deanna, you're the oldest. We're going to make you go redhead. And I was like, all right, cool. Sounds good to me. I was so excited because up to that point, I wasn't allowed to dye my hair.
And now you had to
and
for
I was
work.
Like, yes, I'm so excited. And so, yeah, I got to dye my hair, but it was like, I left for the summer from, you know, in DC and then I came back and I was a redhead and people like didn't recognize me. And they're like, oh, she dyed her hair. Like, I remember it being such a big deal.
No, you got the dream back to school moment. It's the back to school moment we all wanted to have every year.
Yeah, pretty much.
You were like, sorry guys, I was shooting in Chicago. They changed my hair because there were too many blondes and it was me.
And now it's me. Yeah. That's what it felt like. I did feel like such a celebrity getting back because people were like, oh, Deanna. And this is a huge deal. Yeah.
And you're like, it's for the show. It's not a big deal, guys. It's
yeah,
for
yeah,
the
yeah.
show.
Don't even worry about it. Like, don't talk to me. Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I love it. You are used to the spotlight, but you certainly still deserve it. And I can't wait for people to hear this music. So before we go to the 5 questions, we're about to go into the 10K 5. Let's talk real quick about where they can hear this in a way that is the most helpful to the artist, D. If you had it your way, how would people listen to your music?
I would say the best way to do it is if you have like Apple iTunes purchasing like my EP or the single to download it directly to your phone is definitely the most helpful to me. And also like adding it to a playlist on Spotify. If that's your main way of listening to music, add it to a playlist and listen to it from there. That is like the best way like to help me out.
What does adding it to a playlist do algorithm-wise? Anything?
It just shows that it's something that people want to come back to and they're more likely to shop it out to other people that listen to similar things.
Oh my gosh, I never thought about that. What a great hint. We have a lot of people who come on 10K who are artists. So
yeah,
that's good
playlisting to know. Is a really, really, really helpful thing.
Awesome. So we'll make a playlist. And sure, I'll make a playlist. Why not?
There you go.
And just look up Deanna Gowland. You can find her right there. I am so all about this Make a Sound track that she just dropped. It's funky. It's fun. It's a summer bop, as the kids would say. It's a wholesome summer bop. Like my students probably be like, it's so wholesome. I'm like, is that good now? That's good now?
It's good. Yeah.
Because okay. When I was a kid, that would not be good, but it's good. Okay, good. Cool. Wholesome bop. You can find her there. Also, they can follow you on what? Instagram?
I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter.
What's your name on the things?
It's just Deanna_Gowland.
Deanna_Gowland. Find her, like her, subscribe, do all the things and put her on a playlist. But now it is time, Dee, for this 10K 5. Dee has chosen not to get these in advance because she's just
so
seeing
ready.
Where the wind takes her. She's like, maybe I'll move in the middle of a pandemic. Maybe I'll dye my hair red. Maybe I'll live in DC while I work in Chicago, like whatever. She's
you never
she's ready.
Know. Yeah.
All right, Dee. They're gonna start super simple.
Okay.
What are you obsessed with right now? What's your obsession?
My obsession right now.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the most random thing possible.
Perfect.
But this one brand of salt and vinegar chips.
What brand?
Okay, it's Hers, H-E-R-R-S.
Yeah.
They don't sell them out here. And I've only ever found them in like the middle of nowhere gas stations in North Carolina.
In the South. I think they only have them in the South because that's the brand that has like ketchup flavored chips.
Oh, really? I didn't know about that. I literally
Pretty
have
sure.
a bag right here. But like fun story. I'm so obsessed with these chips. I love salt and vinegar chips, but this brand is the best in my opinion because it's more vinegary than salty. I've like taken time to really think about this and I looked it up online to see if I could buy them or like get them shipped to me. And, originally I was going to buy them from the main website I was going to get 40 bags for like $60. And then I found them on another website and I got 84 bags for $40. So now I have 80 bags of salt and vinegar chips. Because I am so obsessed with them.
No, this is what the internet does to you. You like one thing, and then you're like, it is cheaper if I buy a year's supply of eyeliner.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, now I have six eyeliners. I don't know where to put this. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. That's my current obsession.
I love salt and vinegar chips in general, but also if I'm phlegmy as a singer, those salt and vinegar chips will scrape that out. Bye-bye.
I have never thought of doing that before.
The salt and the vinegar dries it up anyway. And then especially if you get kettle cut or like kettle chips.
Yeah.
And they just kind of scratch their way down and get rid of it. You can sing again.
Wow. I'm going to start doing that. I have enough bags to last me till I'm like 37. So
you say that now, but next week you'll be like, darn it.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Next question. What's on your wish list?
What's on my wish list? Oh my goodness. Wow. That is such a good question. Probably any amount of like sound equipment, if that makes sense. Like I'm looking at a new interface to like make my demos sound better for music production. That's on my wish list. I was looking at one that was like $500 and I was like, that's pretty affordable. It's by the brand Apollo, I think. And then I found out in the time that I was saving up for it, they stopped making it and they made a better version, except that one's like $850 now. So that's on my wish list. I'm saving up for that guy.
Oh
yeah.
I know. It gets addictive, right?
Like gear.
The gear gets pretty addictive. The nice thing is a lot of it doesn't lose their resale value. So if you are comfortable letting go of your old gear, which some people are not, but if you're comfortable letting go of it, usually you only lose like $50 here and there.
Yeah, that's not too bad. When I upgraded the keyboard that I used to record, I ended up getting, I think I only lost like $25 on top of it, which I was like, that's perfect. I will take that.
Yeah, if you can constantly just be adding like 200 at a time as you upgrade, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. During the pandemic, there were all these people that just kind of like made amazing music in their apartments. Amber Marks. Do you listen to Amber Marks?
I love Amber Marks. Yeah.
And she just did all of that by herself in her apartment.
That's crazy.
I think that's amazing. She does this cover of Heart-Shaped Box, Nirvana's Heart-Shaped Box, that is like mind-blowingly creative and amazing. And she just did it by herself.
That's
on
so
her
cool.
computer.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I'm obsessed with stuff like that. Okay. Here's a cool meaty question. What would you do right now if you had $10,000 and you had to spend it in one day?
And I had to spend it in one day.
Yes. That's the question.
Ooh. I would probably use it as a down payment to get a new car.
Hey.
That's like so boring, but like,
no,
you know.
But LA, you can't fake a car in LA. You have to have a working vehicle in Los Angeles.
Yeah. My brain is like, you can't have fun. You have to think about like spending this on normal stuff, but like, sorry.
You're fine. But don't worry. I mean, the only reason we don't curse on the podcast is because if we did, we'd have to press the explicit button.
Oh, yeah.
Like literally when you upload it. And so we were like, it's not worth it.
No, I totally get that.
Okay, let's say your car's working. And not just working. Let's say you've got a Prius. You're a full LA.
Good to go.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's a used Prius.
Amazing.
And it runs on vegetable oil that you got from, not Steak and Shake, In-N-Out, that you got from In-N-Out.
Perfect.
Okay, so now that you have your vegetable oil In-N-Out car, it runs animal style. Then, such a niche joke. It's like five people that'll get that. It's fine. What would you spend $10,000 on then?
What would I spend it on then?
In an irresponsible, let's say.
Like do whatever I want type thing?
Superfluous way. Yeah.
I would go to Greece. That's what I would do.
Why that Greece?
Santorini has been on my list of like places I want to go for probably the last like 2 or 3 years. And I'm not usually a huge fan of the beach, but I feel like you can't be in Greece and like see that water and the beautiful architecture and be sad. So I'm like, I've only been to Europe one time and I want to go back so badly. And it just, I think the culture there is beautiful and I would love to just like get fully immersed in it.
This 2-year obsession with Santorini, is it because you saw me in Mamma Mia two years ago?
That's exactly it. Yeah. That's the only reason. I was like,
And I hope that there's a wedding and I hope there's a pregnancy scare and I don't know who the dad is. Like, that's really what Greece is about for me.
That's pretty much all I ask. Yeah. I just want to dance and have like a really famous band. And then, my daughter doesn't know who her dad is. That's really all
I perfect.
Ask.
I love that you made yourself Donna and you were not Sophie. That's how you know that Dee just got old. Dee now thinks of herself no longer as a musical theater ingenue because you just identified with the mom and not Sophie.
I love Donna though in that show. She has such a good time.
It's a great role. I stand by that show, even though it doesn't, you know, push any social justice envelopes at all. I just think it's a good time. Mm-hmm. I had such a good time doing it. And it was a party. I feel like you could not leave that without being happy.
Yeah. It's such a good time. And I love the mega mix at the end, like for the bows. That was the best part.
I love it. Yeah. I feel really strongly that there's theater that changes your life and then there's theater that changes your day. And I think they're both equally important.
Yeah.
Because some of those people might be surgeons and they just needed to laugh and then they can go be a better surgeon tomorrow, you know? But we don't really get to see those connections
absolutely
from our side of the stage, but I believe it's important. Okay. Santorini. We went real far off that,
It's
totally
fine.
We got back. I'm not stressed out. If you had $10,000 to give away, how would you do it?
Ooh. Okay, let's see. Again, I can go with the super boring answer and just say I would give it to my parents to put towards like paying off their house because they just bought a new house.
I love that.
I mean, it's not like nearly what they ended up paying for it, but every little bit helps. I would probably do that. Or maybe I'd split it. I'd give some to them and then some to my sister so that I can get her to move out here with me. Because I miss my sister.
Oh. Yeah, you could just move. You could actually use the 10 and just move her out.
Yeah, maybe I'd do that. I'd be like, hey, come on. Come out here. That'd be fun, yeah. Or charity.
Come on, sis.
There you go.
Or charity. or charity.
Yeah.
Do you have a charity that is near and dear to you?
You know, I really don't. I have a tendency to when I do donate to charities, it is like people like my friends, I see them posting like, oh, this is something that's really important to me. And I'll just donate to that. But that's something that I really do want to get started into. I'm not sure how often you've been out here, but obviously there's a really, really bad homeless problem out here in LA. And that is something that I've looked into a lot recently is like doing volunteer work to work in like food kitchens and things like that, just to help. Cause you know, I think that it's not a homeless person's fault that they're homeless. There's so many outside factors that cause it to happen. And it's such a, you know, it's such a looked down upon thing. And I want to help because I know it's not anybody's fault. And, you know, we should help how we can. Definitely someplace I would like to turn, you know, money if I had expendable income like that to be able to just give.
And there's also, I mean, this is very sad, but in New York, it's also a safety issue sometimes where I like deliberately will not engage or I'll deliberately cross the street. And it is not because I am scared of homeless people, but it's because I'm a woman walking by myself and you don't let a person talk to you on the street, you know, like, or approach you if you have another avenue to walk.
Yep.
So, and then that gets muddied up in your head too, because in your head, it does feel like you're running away from a homeless person.
Yeah, it is. It's good though to reflect, you know, after the fact, on like what is the reasoning behind this? And it's because, sometimes you really do have to come to terms with like, we live in a dark world sometimes, and you got to take care of yourself as a single woman walking alone in a city at nighttime sometimes, you know,
I just got a whistle.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just got one.
Still a happy tune.
No, I got the scared whistle.
Oh no. You did?
No, yeah. I didn't get the... We bought whistles to carry on us. Oh my gosh, how many different ways of interpreting that. So what I mean is I got a danger whistle to put in my purse.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them on the market now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going back to New York as a woman who's Asian, so I can't wait.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. I'm going to have that whistle on me all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I've thought about, because people are like, oh, you should carry a knife on you or pepper spray.
Whoa.
And like that.
Whoa, that
me.
Got intense. The knife got intense.
Yeah, and that scares me. I'm like, I couldn't do that. But I have thought about, they have, like, this is also very intense, mini tasers that you can buy. And I would probably, I could probably do that. I could use a taser.
I kind of like the knife idea only because you could pretend you have it for other reasons, right? You could be like, mm-hmm. well, I eat a lot of apples. Like there's a lot.
Like, I do, just, yeah.
And it would be useful once, like it would actually have a purpose when you buy something from CVS. It's in that terrible plastic clamshell and you're in the car. At least you could,
yeah.
you know, get in there. So there's that. There's at least other options for the knife.
You'll start having a pocket knife on me then.
They'll get you by making it seem like you never need the knife part. You're carrying around a corkscrew and a nail file and a magnifying glass. And eventually I'm like, just get a purse. Just put a knife in a purse. And hard to take those things out.
Yeah, you need like a knife to get it out anyways.
You need a knife to get the stuff out of the knife. Absolutely. This took a turn, this $10,000 question. So before we go to the last question, I just want to reiterate where they can find you on Instagram, on Twitter, on all the things. You're Deanna_Gowland. Mm-hmm. Check her out on Spotify. Add her to the playlist. We got that cool tip. I love that. And if you want to help her out even more, purchase that album on Apple iTunes and tell people about independent artists, because that's cool too. Point them to this episode. They'll get to know Dee, and she's pretty great, as you can see.
Oh my gosh.
And we're about to go into that last question. Dee, we actually end every single episode with this question, and we have since 2018. We talk about our happies. So what's your happy?
My happy for... Let's see. Today, my happy is just that I'm stable. Like, is that okay for that to be my happy? Like,
that sounds great to be
your happy.
For one
of the first times in, like, I would say years, I feel stable, like emotionally, financially, mentally, like professionally, all of that stuff. Like, I'm just feeling good. So that's my happy.
That's the best, most content, happy ever. You literally were like, everything's going great. I'm like, that awesome. That's so good. That is so good. And it's great to see you. I mean, we haven't really talked throughout the pandemic, except for the fact that I made your family's sweet potatoes for Thanksgiving.
Good.
And I added honey whiskey.
Which is such a good idea. Yeah.
Highly recommend. So besides stealing your family's recipe for Thanksgiving, we haven't really talked that much. And so to kind of see you on the other end of this pandemic, so grounded and so comfortable with your new life, and you took a leap that didn't really feel like a leap, it seems. It seems like you were kind of, you felt comfortable with it. And you've always kind of had that centeredness around you anyway. But it's awesome. It's awesome to see it. And it's awesome to hear it in your music. I think your music sounds grounded and joyful and playful. So,
well, thank you. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Dee Gowland. Come on. Always been a fan. If I had known about your cooking show in Chicago, I would have been even a bigger fan. I would have written in and been like, tell me about that redhead.
Oh my gosh. I'll share an episode with you if you want. I have access to the old episodes. You can see me.
Yes. Yeah, like
okay.
100% yes. That's my happy. Yay.
Yay.
All right, everyone. Make sure you catch up with Dee. Thanks for joining us for another 10K Saturday. And we will see you next week. Say bye, Dee.
Bye.
Ooh, I'm sitting here covered. phone. Never felt so goddamn exposed. Cold and wet, the rain together in the ways I thought we'd be. Staying here a little further, far away, so you can hear me make a sounds like a fake apology.
That was 10K Saturday with Allison and Lulu. And don't forget, with friends like us, who needs amenities?